Well, good morning, everybody. My name's Larry Jacobs, and this is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio on July 18th, 2022. And it's a pleasure to have you here today with us, or maybe you're listening on the archives. A lot of people do. Welcome to podcasting. All right, and we archive everything over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, which is the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, all right, which produces these education talk radio podcasts. All right, we work very hard for equity across pre-K-12 nationwide, and we're working with on teacher recruitment and retention with a lot of things that are linked over at ace-ed.org. Our magazine is there. It's a lovely online journal called Equity and Access Pre-K-12. Just click on the cover and enjoy the magazine. That's at ace-ed.org. Our Excellence in Equity Awards program, which is nominations are winding down, but there's still time, if I may. Just click on awards over there. You'll see the icon. All right, you can go over to SEL Today, our SEL Resource Center, seltoday.org. That's linked as well. And also, of course, teacher-retention.com. We are so concerned about teacher recruitment, retention, and the educator shortage. So please check it all out at ace-ed.org, again, where we'll archive this podcast. And today's podcast is with Dr. Jason Glass. And Dr. Glass is the State Commissioner of Education, Commonwealth Commissioner of Education, okay, for the great state of Kentucky, home of the best bourbon in the world. He's also the chief learner, and I'd like to welcome him now. So, Dr. Jason Glass, I'm Larry Jacobs, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Larry. It's wonderful to be on with you. Appreciate you having me.
That's my pleasure. And by the way, I'll start off by saying you're welcome here anytime. It doesn't have to end today.
Thank you.
Okay, please come back on and talk to us. You know, I noticed you were I was a social studies teacher too, okay, and you were in Hazard, Kentucky. Is that eastern Kentucky?
It is. It's a coal town in eastern Kentucky. Yeah. It's southeast Kentucky and surrounded by a coal region, a lot of deep mining and surface mining that took place over the year. But it was a great place to spend a few years. It really was a wonderful and supportive community of the school system there.
It really is. Do you know the folks over at KVEC, the Kentucky Valley Ed Cooperative, they over there?
Sure. Yeah. No, that's,
okay.
That's
I love
a
them.
Great regional co-op and a lot of innovation coming out of that region.
They are the best, and I've done a number of shows with them over the years. They're just great people, and I noticed the Hazard, Kentucky connection, so I just wanted to put that out there, okay? It's great stuff, and it's so hard. Jason, you're going to love this. I learned that a holler, okay, is one way in and the same way out. It's not a valley, okay? You can't cut all the way
right
through. I learned that from
right
them. There's... I'll never forget that. It's my geography lesson. Okay.
Yeah, everybody lives up in hollers in eastern Kentucky. A lot of people do.
Yeah.
So you go up to these little finger valleys, and there's houses
amazing
along the way. And
it's amazing. And it's hard to get internet there. You guys went through with the pandemic. We'll talk about all this. You know, and just making sure everybody has access. And now you're in Frankfort, Kentucky. Okay, well, I won't spare you the old joke about Louisville and Louisville. You know that joke. Do you know that joke?
Well, however you say it, just try to move your mouth less, and you're getting closer to the way a native Kentuckian would say it. So if you feel your lips moving at all, it's too much.
Louisville. Okay, capital is not Louisville. Capital's Frankfort. Okay, that's where Jason
Frankfort
is. Okay, and it's an old joke. And by the way, best bourbon in the world. Okay, but we'll just move on from that one. Okay, we'll move on from that one. All right, it is the best bourbon
we'll,
in the world.
Yeah,
I got to tell you.
Bourbon, horses, basketball, those are the kind of
that's
things
right
the state is known for.
Yeah,
for
we
sure
can talk more about the basketball, but I'll give you the bourbon and the horses. That's all we have to talk
about. Fallen on hard times. Yeah, we've fallen on our times, but we're coming back. Always next year, right?
Keep wishing. That's good. That's a good. very proud. Okay. And by the way, I got to just – you have a chief communications officer named Tony Tatman, and she was very helpful in getting this show together. So, Tony, thank you. And you can turn to her, Jason, and tell her I said thanks, okay? Please.
I will do it. Yeah, Tony's incredible. She's a former journalist, and so I really love having a journalist as a communications
person.
You're
lucky.
For obvious reasons, but Tony's a great talent and great writer, so we're fortunate to have her.
You are. She was terrific with me. So thank you, Tony. And this show, I got all hooked up with Jason through the CCSSO, the Chief State School Officers Association. I got to thank Carolyn and everybody over there for putting this together. They're great at CCSSO.org. Okay, Kentucky used to be in Colorado. Now you're in Kentucky. Both states start with a K. I need spelling help. Spelling help. They don't. Really.
We can help you with that.
I know you can.
I know people.
I hope you do. I hope you do. Okay, no, Colorado starts with a C, everybody. Okay, good old Kentucky. All right, what's happening over there? Talk about the status of education now as we come out of the pandemic. SEL's on everybody's mind. We'll talk about hiring teachers later. School safety's on everybody's mind, obviously. Okay, what's happening with education? What are your top priorities in the great Commonwealth these days? Go ahead, Jason.
Well, I think we've got the same sort of struggles and concerns that schools all around the country have, really all around the world have, emerging from the pandemic. You know, if we're emerging from it, I've lost track of where the middle or the end is at this point. So it's just an ongoing thing that we continue to have to try and manage. But those same challenges you talked about around student engagement and a quote-unquote learning loss, or how far behind students are compared to pre-COVID benchmark levels, social-emotional learning, those sorts of human connections, and making sure that we get those restored. We've got a real crisis on the educator workforce front that's true here in Kentucky and also true across the country. But I think where we're trying to make the biggest imprint or have the biggest difference is really around the student experience. And to point to what are the things that our students are experiencing in the classroom and outside the classroom in the course of learning, and how can we, as we come back out of the COVID experience, how can we make sure that the learning experiences that our students are having are more meaningful, more relevant, more authentic, better connected to the kinds of complex work and reasoning and efforts that our students will have to do when they leave school. So how can we make the learning experience better and more meaningful and more authentic? That is the main focus of what we are working on here in Kentucky, and that direction came to us from listening to Kentuckians. We had listening tours during the pandemic. We did them electronically and sort of Zoom town halls around the state where we asked interview questions. We had about 1,200 people participate. So we had nearly 1,200 interviews we could pull from. And that was the one of the three big ideas that people came forward with, Kentuckians came forward with, and said, you need to make this a priority. It was change the learning experiences of the students so that they are prepared for the fast-moving world that's already here and is just getting faster.
So when you say that, and I agree with you, okay, I think anybody would agree with you, okay? We have to make the student experience. And by the way, I think if we make the student experience better, we're going to help the challenge of making people decide to become educators. If people have a great time in school, they'll want to come back to that, okay? And I think in the long term, it's going to help us create new educators. All right, it's an odd thing to say, but I think that's very important. You know, if you're having a good time with something, you want to come back and enjoy yourself, and I think that's key. So when you say that, Jason, what is the student experience? What do you want it to be?
Well, I think if we look back at
what is Kentucky, what do Kentuckians want it to be? Maybe that's a better way to put it. But anyway, you
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. We're carrying out what they told us they wanted us to deliver on.
Exactly.
If we look back over the past 20 or 30 years, the focus at the policy level has been around trying to establish standards, academic standards, and then build tests aligned to those standards, and then build rankings of schools aligned to those tests. And we even extended the test and the accountability down to the building and principal and individual teacher level. So that was a big effort in the race to the top years. And we've invested a lot in school choice, school privatization, sort of trying to bring a competitive spirit into schools with the thinking that if schools competed against each other and we had all this data and there was more standardization, then performance would increase. So, and there are valuable points in all of those large-scale change efforts. But at the end of the day, if we look at what the students are actually doing on a day-to-day basis, we have to wonder, have we really changed that experience and changed it in a way that makes what kids are doing in school closer to the kinds of things they'll have to do when they leave our school? So when we talk about changing the student experience, we're still connected to academic content. So kids are still doing reading and writing and math and science and all the other content areas, but we need to change the work that we have students doing where they're not only interacting with content, but they're also intentionally working on a set of skills. And these skills have been around for a long time. The U.S. Army years ago called them soft skills, and that term has taken off, but some people call them 21st century skills. We need a better term because we're 22
years in now.
Yeah, I don't like the term.
These aren't soft skills.
Get with the program.
They aren't soft skills.
Right. Tony Wagner calls them survival skills.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of terms. But what we're really talking about are things that in the era of instant access to information and automation and a globally connected world, a memorization and repetitive routine work is not very useful. So what becomes more useful is, can you solve a complex problem? Are you resilient? Can you persevere through change? Can you solve problems that don't have possibly one right answer or even a good answer? You have to make a difficult choice and live with the consequences of the choice. Can you create? Can you be an entrepreneur? Can you stand and deliver effectively in communicating? So these kinds of skills, really the businesses have been telling us for years, and the global economy is certainly telling us now, that those are the kinds of skills that are going to be the currency of success in the future. And so when we think about changing the student experience, it's redesigning what our kids are doing in classroom to make sure that they are developing and honing and practicing those kinds of skills.
But I couldn't agree with you more. Years ago, I talked to I can't remember who exactly was, but he was from your neighboring state of Ohio, all right? And he said that he was a guy who took high school kids and tried to find them jobs, okay, through the school district, all right? And he said to me, we have to make a change because people are hired for their hard skills, but they are always fired because they lack the soft skills. Okay, and he said, I hate that term, soft skills. You can quote that guy. It doesn't have to be from me. Anonymous. Okay, but it's so obvious, and we can do so much to help these kids. I think it's just great. How we doing on all this? Because it's good to say you're at the top. Okay, you look down from your throne upon all of Kentucky schools. I'm only kidding you. All right. You look down and you look at them. How are we doing with all this? How do we have teachers and schools react to all these changes and make the difference? Where's it start?
Yeah. Well, that term, soft skills and hard skills, that you mentioned as an interesting backstory, it came from the Army. And they were struggling with how do we train soldiers, and this was in the 1960s, recognized that soldiers at that point were needing different kinds of skills to be successful, and so they came up with this sort of two different kinds of skills. Hard skills were skills that you needed to work with things that were hard, machines, weapons, tanks, jeeps, those sorts of things. And then they said there's this whole other host of skills that are also very important, and that's and you need them to work with people who are soft. Our bodies are soft. Some are softer than others. So that's where the origin of that term. So some people think that it's because these are easier skills, but that's not really what the Army met when they started talking about these soft skills. It just meant that there were certain, like, hard machines or human beings. So the human skills, they were saying, were more important. We've certainly seen that borne out just as the world has continued to change, and we have instant access to information and artificial intelligence and machines that can repeat and bring facts to us very quickly. So these shifts in skills are becoming even more important. And Larry, I think
agreed.
We should recognize that the world is as slow as it's going to get right now. And it's just getting faster and faster and faster and accelerating.
I'm going to steal a lot of your quotes, Dr. Glass. I'm loving this. I'm going to claim them as my own. Just keep talking.
I think some about my maternal grandfather was a Kentucky tobacco farmer, and he literally started his career in the early 1900s plowing that red dirt in Metcalf County, Kentucky, behind a mule. And by the end of his career, by the end of his life, he was driving his Chevrolet pickup truck on an interstate highway system. So that's how much change took place in one lifetime.
Yep.
And so if you think about the 3- and 4-year-olds that we've got entering into our preschools and school right now, what is the world going to be like 100 years from now? And they're probably going to live to be over 100.
That's right.
How much is the world going to change for them? So that needs to be the mark. Pull the Gretzky quote, that's where we need to be skating to. That's where the puck's going to be. The world is going to be changing faster.
Wayne Gretzky didn't care where the puck was. He only cared where it was going to be, which made him the greatest. You're exactly right. You're dead on that. And congratulations to your former state for winning the Stanley Cup.
The Avalanche are on fire. That was great.
I grew up
in Kentucky, but I spent almost 20 years in Colorado.
There is that's Tennessee. There is no Kentucky hockey team, is there?
No pro teams of any kind in Kentucky. We just have basketball. That's the only thing that people care about.
I've never heard of basketball.
What is it?
No, I'm only kidding. Not basketball.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So one of the things, Larry, that Kentucky has going for it is that this is a direction that the state has been investing time and energy in for several years. If you go back to the Kentucky Education Reform Act that happened in 1990, at the heart of that was a pedagogical shift around really deeper learning. They didn't call it deeper learning at that time, but it was a hands-on, experience-based approach and an emphasis on that. And so that sort of got swept away with the rising standards movement and No Child Left Behind and accountability. A lot of that sort of fell to the wayside, but that spirit around changing the experience for students remained. And for years, Kentucky has had cohorts and groups, and our largest teacher education program is at the University of Kentucky, and they, for almost 15 years now, have run a leadership program called Next Gen Leadership, which is all focused on bringing about
these kinds
of deeper experiences. So
there's
a lot of capacity and energy here for these kinds of shifts. So I think we're really at a tipping point when we think about the capacity here. And now we've got Kentuckians through this outreach effort that we did telling us this needs to be the strategic priority.
It does. It does. And on that note, since you brought up teacher education, okay, and UK is not the only teacher education school in the state, all right, how are we doing? I'll just ask Kentucky, in your opinion, are the education schools teaching their students to be the teachers we need them to be with the right, and I might add, a change in coursework? Courses, believe me, I never had when I was in education school, but they need it. Okay, what's the status of education schools these days in Kentucky?
Well, several of them have struggled with getting enrollment levels to stabilize, and we've seen the same declines in the number of people entering the teaching profession that has happened nationally, and that's been occurring for some years. So that is a really troubling trend, and it's risen to the point now that we're having problems filling positions where we used to have a glut of applicants, like elementary
studies,
physical education. Now we're struggling to find people in those roles. We have seen a couple of our universities turn the tide on that, UK being one of them, and then Western Kentucky University. Those two schools have actually increased the number of candidates they have. But, they have told me that even though they can get more people into their teacher education programs, they still have a hard time getting those graduates to take jobs teaching because of the compensation levels and then a lot of the just rhetoric around the profession and workload. So this is really tough. It's a really tough time. I think we've reached a crisis moment, not just here in Kentucky, but really around the country. And we have to, we're going to have to think about how we treat and compensate and train our educators. And this should be a bipartisan or nonpartisan issue. Everybody wants talented professional educators working in their community, and we have made decisions that support that outcome for some years. So that's all coming home to roost now. But directly to your question, Larry, I've had great engagement and reactions from our teacher education programs and colleges and universities in the state around this concept of deeper learning and trying to change the experiences of students. I think something that you were saying at the outset, this kind of instruction or this kind of experience is the reason a lot of people got into teaching. They didn't get into teaching to deliver monologues or prepare PowerPoints and worksheets. They got in it to inspire students. So the kinds of shifts in learning we're talking about are really get to the heart of why people become teachers.
We got to make them really love it and enjoy it, and that changing the student experience over the long term is going to make all the difference in the world. Okay? It's that simple. It really is. I mean, I was talking to a superintendent in Long Island a few weeks ago, and she said, okay, we really want the kids to enjoy school, because if they don't enjoy school, they're not going to come back. Okay? If teachers don't enjoy the place they work, they're not going to come back. So we're trying to change the whole structure. This is up in New York, of what we're doing. I can't remember what district it was somewhere in Long Island, okay, to really encourage people this is a wonderful place to be. That's what we got to do all over the country. It's that simple. They can be wonderful places.
In the course of the pandemic, we saw how important those human relationships and connections were. That's really what we missed out on, and saw how powerful those connections and how meaningful they were. So as our schools have worked, and we're standing here at the edge of what may be our first year of undisrupted learning and since 2019.
Yay!
So that's incredible to think about too.
I hope so.
Yeah, I really
from your lips to the good Lord's ear. I hope so.
Let's hope so. I really hope that and ask that our teachers and administrators really focus on those relationships and connections with students. We got a lot of learning loss to catch up. We need to work on that diligently and at the level of importance it has. But we do that by making sure that our kids feel a sense of belonging and engagement in school. And this is going to take us some time. We're likely looking at several years of recovery. I haven't seen our assessment results yet from this past spring. I think that we'll probably see a nice gain in outcomes compared to the previous year. But I think it'll also show that we still got a long way to go. And I think the fastest way we do that is by making sure kids fall in love with school again. And that's what we're focusing on.
And teachers. We got to make sure teachers fall in love with school again. Yeah, it's that simple. And you know what you said? I'm going to just jump on it. We all, and this is good, we always have a long way to go. We'll never be perfect. And we don't want to be. We got a long way to go, always. That's great.
Right.
That's what
right.
makes it
climbing
so good.
Out. I did my graduate school work at Seton Hall in New Jersey, just across the river from New York there. So I have lots of colleagues and friends that work in that area, great educators. And Seton Hall has a decent little basketball program too, Larry.
I was just going to say that.
I seem to be attracted to schools that have a good basketball program. And the football team at Seton Hall is undefeated.
There you go. And they're not even playing now, which is why they're undefeated. It's July. Right. Congratulations to them. You know, Seton Hall's always been a great – I grew up in Philly, so I know all that sort of stuff. I want to ask you something. You have an equity playbook. Tony told me this. You have an equity playbook with 70 public school districts across the Commonwealth and who have opted into this. What's that? Because we are the Consortium for Equity in Education. That's what we call ourselves. Okay, so talk about the equity playbook, 70 public school districts across Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Yeah, well, we have when I was hired as commissioner almost 2 years ago now, the state board, I work for the state board here, and they, this was just after George Floyd's killing and Breonna Taylor's killing. So there was a lot of social unrest around and concern around equity. So they, one of the things they made a priority for me coming in was a focus on equity. So I was able to hire a colleague of mine, Thomas Woods Tucker, who was also a superintendent in Colorado, to come in and lead our equity work. Thomas is a former National Superintendent of the Year, so we're really fortunate to have that level of talent at the state agency working for us here in Kentucky. So Thomas and his team really have worked on this focus on equity. One element of it is this equity playbook, and the equity playbook is a series of steps, research, evidence-based practices, looking at student engagement, student achievement, resource allocation, matters such as those,
right.
and what are things that school districts can do to address equity gaps in their school district. So we have individualized coaching available to the district to evaluate their data. We have a companion a support system called the Equity Dashboard, where we have a lot of all the state data available on the schools, so they can use the Equity Dashboard to get the information. They use the Equity Playbook to determine their steps, and then the schools districts, the districts build teams at the district, and then they have a coach from the state, and that's our model right now. So that's one of the equity efforts that we have underway. We're really proud of it. It's just gotten launched, and we've been thrilled to see so many of our districts jump forward, right, and want to take part in that.
That's great. And then they all want this. So it's, you know, it just get it started, and I think it's just super, okay, that you're doing this.
And entirely,
I wish you the best of luck with it. Good.
Entirely optional, and you know,
course.
We like to do a lot of things by just do work of quality, and that the quality will bring people to the work. So that's how we've approached this. So it's not required by any means, but we think it's a worthwhile endeavor, and are doing it with integrity and quality. And great to have so many districts in the state interested in it.
It's great. I have the. How many districts are in the state? How many school districts are in the state?
We have 171 districts in Kentucky.
Okay, and 70 of them, 70, that's a good percentage, have volunteered to opt in to the equity playbook. And school districts, superintendents, are just like the kids. Who gets to volunteer for this, says the teacher, and only X percentage will raise their hand. Okay, children's score
right.
is good to do. Okay, we never get over that. Believe me, you got 170 to be 150 next year when this works.
Yeah.
Okay. But
everybody's
going to raise their hand for the first round. You know,
we think that's
called class participation.
Great starting point. Yeah, we think that's a great starting point for this work. And then on the deeper learning work, we've used some of our COVID relief money to establish networks across the state on the deeper learning side. We actually had 166 of our 171 districts sign on to be part of that. So that that effort is a little further ahead and gives you some idea of the scale and readiness for that kind of change. So the equity work for its first year to have 70 is a
great
start, and we expect that number to continue to climb.
Like I said, good classroom participation. And the last thing as we wind down here, Jason, although I'd love to do more with you, okay, but for this particular one, we're going to wind down a few minutes, but there's a new with a program you put together called United We Learn, all right? And is that, how would you describe that? That's the umbrella term. What's that?
Yeah, that's that. United We Learn pays homage to the state's motto, which is United We Stand, Divided We Fall, which is a good lesson for the whole country right now, I think. But
sure is.
United We Learn really was the report that a group of Kentuckians put together after all of those listening tours. So after we had those 1,200 interviews, we had a group of Kentuckians that was more diverse than the state in terms of its geographic and demographic makeup. They sifted through all that interview data, then they conducted even more interviews in their communities, and they came up with three big priorities for Kentucky schools going forward. The first of those we talked about extensively, which is that we need to change the learning experiences for our students. So that's the big idea number one. The second one was that we need to bring innovations to our schools, particularly around assessments and accountability. And that came from a sense that our systems of assessment and accountability, because they're standardized, machine-scored, content-driven models, they can be barriers to the kinds of deeper learning that we want to bring about. So the kinds of things you learn to do for a standardized test don't translate very well to the rest of the world outside of that context many professions. So there was a sense that we need to bring in innovation, so particularly around assessment accountability. So that was the second big idea. And the third big idea was that a lot of decisions around education policy take place in closed rooms with people wearing suits, a lot of white men making those calls, people that look like me. And that we needed to make sure that we involved our communities and people in them, and especially people in our communities who haven't always been at the seat of power when decisions were made. So they wanted us to bring them along, bring communities along. And I think this whole national parent power movement is an opportunity to engage parents in a way we haven't in the past. We all want and would love to have more parent engagement with our schools. So I think this is an opportunity to do that, but also to reach out beyond that into working with students, working with other community members, business leaders. This is a time to reinvest and rebuild those relationships in public education.
It sure is. And I'm going to extend this for a second. I just want to ask you this. Do the pitch, teaching in Kentucky. I know it's hard out there to find teachers. Do the pitch. Come on, Jason. Sell them on Kentucky.
Well, if you come to Kentucky, you're going to spend your career working on meaningful learning experiences with students. So I think that is a compelling reason to come and work in this state. We're not going in a direction that's purely memorization and a focus on standardized assessments. We're going to get to the content, but we want to get to the deeper learning, the deeper experiences for students. So that is an exciting reason to work in Kentucky.
Yeah, and you reminded me, you know, I was a social studies teacher, and I think I got all my A's based on the fact that I could memorize stuff in the good old days.
It was
and I wonder how good I would have thought
point.
These days, you know?
Yeah, now that you have Google and Siri, it's a little less valuable,
Right. I'm getting more obsolete the longer I talk here. It's unbelievable.
You gotta be able to sift through. Can you trust the information, and what can you do with it?
Exactly.
But
deeper learning,
access
media,
to the information,
media literacy. It's all about it. You're doing a great job down there, my friend. I thank you so much for this, Jason. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Thank you, Larry.
My pleasure. Okay, come back. All right, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. You take care. Bye bye.
Thank you.
That, everybody, is Dr. Jason Glass, who is the Commissioner of Education for the Great Commonwealth of Kentucky. He also described himself as the chief learner. And if you haven't picked it up, he's a hockey and basketball fan. Okay? Good guy. Thank you, and thank you again, Tony. And Carolyn over at CCSSO, all right, who thankfully helped me get the show together, the Council of Chief State School Officers, CCSSO.org. And if you want to learn more about education in Kentucky, education.ky.gov. Okay, check out what we're doing at ace-ed.org, which is where we're going to archive this show. My name is Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.